Costs to originate keep rising, even with more technology in the industry. The problem is the core platform. A new LOS can re-architect the process around data, not humans moving paper files. Vesta has built this LOS, and you can learn more at vesta.com. Welcome, everyone. My guest today is Odetta Cushy, Deputy Chief Economist for First American Financial Corporation, to talk about homeownership among single female-headed households, as well as what's in store for this spring market. Odetta, welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's so great to have you, and especially to talk about this topic, which is near and dear to my heart, of course. Actually, I just bought a house, so even more so. But women home buying, the state of women home buying, and what we see there. I would love to dig into that topic a little bit with you.
Absolutely. First of all, congratulations. That's fantastic news. So we just recently put out a report actually focusing on single women homeownership, of course, in honor of Women's Month, which is March. And really, I think it's the progress that's been made for single women and the prioritizing of homeownership for this demographic. We know that the homeownership rate of single women has consistently outpaced that of single men. And the homeownership rate actually increased to just about 52% last year, which is up from the recent low of 49% in 2016.
It's funny to me that it has flipped so much, and we see so many different demographic trends and changes in the home buying thing, right? I mean, it used to be like, oh, it was married couples. Now we see that, unmarried couples also have a ton of things. Then you have single people and specifically single women, which to me is such a big deal. I remember when my mom and my former mother-in-law, when they tried to buy homes as single women, they were not allowed to. They were not able to. And so we've come so far, and thank goodness. And it's something to celebrate for sure. What do you see as the trends behind that? Like, why is that growing and other things are not?
It's interesting. I think NAR actually put out a study about, what single women are doing in particular. And they show they're making a lot of financial sacrifices in order to be able to afford that home. And so women are, choosing to maybe stay with their parents in lieu of renting to sort of save some of that down payment money for that first home. But really, when we zoom out, the trends that are propelling this are, greater educational attainment for single women, and similarly higher earning power among single women as well. So it's a choice being made, a sacrifice being made to be able to afford that first home, but certainly it's these larger factors, higher educational attainment, higher incomes that are sort of propelling the growth in homeownership rates among this demographic.
So we saw that employment among women really took a disproportionate hit in the pandemic. And so it's interesting to me that it's rebounded in this way so that in 2023 we have these big numbers when it felt like that was a real step backwards for women, many of whom had to do caregiving of children or their parents or other people in their lives. What do you think about that?
Yeah, it was called the she session, right? I mean, that was one of the terms over the pandemic because women were facing higher unemployment and they were dropping out of the labor force in greater numbers. We know that women were taking on more domestic work. And we even saw in the Freddie Mac survey, 60% of head of household renters that were single women were feeling like homeownership was out of reach. But over that sort of pandemic time period, we actually saw that median net worth among single women actually increased from about $200,000in 2019 to about $267,000 in the same period. And the primary residence was actually the single largest asset for single women on average. So the value of the primary residence made up 66% of all assets for single women in 2022. So, clearly women are aware that homeownership is a primary driver of wealth creation and they're taking note.
They are. So do we feel like this was sort of a one-off in 2023, or do you think that there is an upward trend here?
No, I think we can expect the trend to continue. I expect, educational attainment among this demographic to continue to rise, which should result in higher purchasing power. And so I don't expect it to be a one-off. I do anticipate the trend to continue.
Well, thanks for, you know, filling us in on that survey and what you guys found very interesting. So I would love to kind of pivot right now to the spring home buying market. We are in spring. It is March. It's here. I feel like we've been talking about it for 6 months because obviously, you know, the housing market in 2023 was just really tough for a lot of people, especially for borrowers and therefore lenders and their real estate partners and everybody. So I think we've all been looking forward to spring, like, okay, this is going to be better. Rates are going to be lower. So let's start at a high level and let's talk about from your perspective, how is spring shaping up compared to what you thought it would be?
You know, I think we were all hoping that we would see maybe a bigger decline in mortgage rates by the time that spring home buying season rolled around. And that would have been important in multiple ways, right? Lower mortgage rates would have hopefully incentivized some sellers to sell their home and simultaneously helped potential buyers with their purchasing power. And unfortunately, we haven't really seen that big decline in mortgage rates. Mortgage rates have sort of remained near 7%. And so we haven't really gotten that bump from a decline in mortgage rates that we were hoping. With that said, I do expect mortgage rates to come down slowly but surely throughout the year. So that will sort of end 2024 with lower mortgage rates. But I don't know that we'll get that in time for the spring home buying season. And so I expect a sort of a more mild spring home buying season because of that fact.
You know, we every week we publish the housing market tracker that Logan does, and he looks at Altos Research. And inventory is low, but it is better than last year. It is significantly better than last year. Let's talk a little bit about inventory and what you're seeing.
Yeah, I look at the same data. so I'm also tracking Logan and Mike on their Altos inventory data. So, you know, inventory historically still very, very low. And we know that you can't buy what's not for sale. So certainly the lack of inventory, I think, will hold back market potential this spring. But even a little bit of an increase, I think, is good news for potential buyers. It can sort of reduce price pressures in the market and also offer buyers more options to choose from. We know that there are still a lot of buyers on the sidelines waiting to jump back in when the payment to paycheck calculation makes sense for them. We know the millennial homeownership rate is just above 50%. So there's still a lot of room for growth there. And so that sort of shadow demand for homeownership is there. But we need rates to cooperate. We need more inventory on the market to give buyers more choice. You know, I think we'll see some progress with that this year. So we keep saying, you know, 2024 will be not too hot, not too cold, but not quite right just yet. Hopefully we'll make a little bit of progress as rates come down, but I don't think we'll get back to sort of a normal, healthy market.
This episode is brought to you by Essentia. A better you starts with better hydration. Essentia is on a mission to inspire people to do what matters most. Their proprietary ionization process transforms water from any source into ionized alkaline water, providing water that's 99.9% pure with a pH of 9.5 or higher. Essentia overachieving H2O, the number one ionized alkaline water. Shop now.
What's your rate forecast for the rest of the year, considering what's happened, you know, up till now in March? Of course, we hoped way back, what was it, November, that maybe March we'd see the first rate cut. But what is your forecast now?
Yeah, I think, you know, I don't know that we'll see that rate cut until the summer, just given some of the inflation reports that we've seen coming in, the hotter than expected and still resilient economy and labor market. I think the Fed is very much taking a sort of wait and see, we're in no rush to cut rates sort of approach. So I think the market is sort of coming together and saying, well, we probably won't see rate cuts until June. And so with that, I don't think that we'll see major moves in mortgage rates until the summer as well. So, you know, we were saying that we could see rates come down to 6% by the end of 2024. You know, I still think that that's feasible. I still think that that's a scenario that could play out is rates sort of approaching that 6% by the end of the year.
I think it's so interesting to look at, you know, of course we've, you know, looked at the Fed and what they're saying. We've dissected, like, this is what they said on this, you know, the 60 Minutes interview I thought was very informative, because the cautiousness, the caution that Powell has. And to me, it seems like, you know, I'm not an economist. I don't have his job. No one would want me to have that job. But it just felt like it was overly cautious given other things. And so, you know, with the inflation report we got just today, the CPI report for February, can you say how you think that's going to play into this?
You know, I don't know that it moves the needle too much. I think it probably makes them feel more comfortable in their decision to be cautious and patient. And I think every report, or the latest reports, have sort of reaffirmed to them that patient stance is the right way to go. Their biggest fear is inflation reacceleration, like a 1970s style inflation reacceleration. And so they would rather err on the side of caution than allow that to happen. You know, what they don't want to do is cut rates and then have to raise rates again. That's really the scenario that they're trying to avoid. And so, you know, the patient stance, the data-driven stance, stays, I think. But I still think generally the markets and the Fed are expecting rate cuts this year. So that's sort of the light at the end of the tunnel for the industry.
What do you see as some of the opportunities that lenders are taking, or maybe borrowers are taking right now to make sure that people get into homes?
Well, from a borrower's perspective, you know, if you can't get into the market right now, this is an opportunity to pay down your debts. This is an opportunity to really sort of study what it is that you want. It's an opportunity to save for that down payment. And so, you know, it can pay to wait, right? That's sort of the more optimistic take on this market, because certainly I know, even in my own circle of friends, there's a lot of people that are interested in buying that first home. And so the way I always tell it to them is just, you know, this is an opportunity to just get yourself in the best position possible to make that first offer when that time comes, when that perfect home comes around. And it will. It's just patience.
It is patience. So, you know, you mentioned millennials, and that we're only seeing, what, about 50% homeowners?
That's right.
Homeownership rate, which is crazy. So what about Gen Z? Gen Z is so different, and it feels like almost they're ready to go.
Yeah, Gen Z, we don't have a lot of data on Gen Z just yet. I'm waiting for that data to sort of see. But I think they are looking like the millennials in a lot of ways. I think they're going to be, you know, a very educated generation, probably staying in school longer, probably prolonging those lifestyle decisions that historically have been highly correlated with buying the first home, getting married, having kids. I think we can probably expect those trends to continue, which is good, because that means we've learned from the millennials. Everyone was up in arms in 2015, 2016, like, millennials are never buying homes, because we were looking around at millennials in their 20s and saying, well, your homeownership rate is way below what Gen X and baby boomers were in, you know, at the same age. And that's just because they were doing it later in life. So when you look at that 40-year-old millennial now compared to Gen X, that homeownership rate differential is a lot narrower. So we know that millennials are interested in homeownership. They're just doing it later in life. And I think now we can learn from that pattern and maybe not freak out as much with when Gen Z maybe does the same, although maybe Gen Z won't be in the same sort of like inventory environment that the millennials found themselves in, right?
So what is the Gen Z equivalent to avocado toast for millennials? What are we going to be like, oh, well, they just need to stop spending money on X and then they'd have enough money to buy a house. I wonder what that is.
I am curious. I think we'll have to do some polling. But yes, avocado toast is definitely the millennial. We own that one. We'll have to put out a poll to the Gen Zers, what they think that is. What do you think?
Absolutely. You know, I don't know. It'd have to be something tied to social media, though. You know, maybe it's like, well, if you weren't on social media so much, you'd have time to do this. But actually, I love Gen Z. One of my kids is Gen Z.
Yeah,
I think they're amazing, and I don't want to throw shade on anybody.
No, they're movers and shakers. Gen Z, I'm a big fan. But yeah, you're right. It has to be tied to social media or something like that. But I don't know what it is.
You know, I think what we learn with the millennials is it all comes back to household formation. Why do people want to own a home? It really comes down to, I mean, of course, it's a great investment. We just talked about single women. So yeah, it doesn't have to be household formation. But I do think that it tends to run with that, like, you know, okay, you know, we need a place for the kid. You know, we're thinking about schools. As long as schools are tied to housing in the U.S., and I know they're not everywhere in the U.S., but mostly, I think that that's why you think about household formation before you buy a house.
Absolutely. I mean, the decision to buy a house is first and foremost a lifestyle decision, right? You first make the decision by yourself or with your spouse that it's time. And then you figure out what you can afford. It's not usually the other way around, right? You first have to decide that you want to be a homeowner, and then you go on to figure out what you can afford and if you can afford and so on and so forth. So we look at the demographics as sort of the main fundamental driving the housing market, and we've always been of that mind.
When was the last time I took a road trip? How many national parks could I hit in 2 weeks? What about hotels? Wait, hey, Erica, how much am I spending on travel?
When your questions about life turn into questions about money, there's Erica, the virtual financial assistant to help you spend, save, and plan smarter. Only from Bank of America. What would you like the power to do? Erica is only available in the English language. You must download the latest version of the mobile banking app, only available on select mobile devices. Your chat may be recorded and monitored for quality assurance. Message and data rates and additional terms may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
So, you know, let's talk about affordability because rates are part of it, but they're not all of it. And one of the most surprising things is the durability of home prices. To me, surprising. In the face of higher rates, you know, we do see the growth slowing down in some areas. In some areas, we don't. It's crazy. Some of those really hot markets that we've been talking about. So where do you see home prices going in 2024?
So we see home prices sort of moderating towards more historical norms. So obviously we had the way too hot double-digit house price growth over the pandemic. That was sort of a result of this perfect storm of, you know, sub 3% mortgage rates being timed with this demographic demand of millennials, a shortage of inventory. And so we don't see anything like that. But I do think there continues to be this ongoing chronic shortage of housing in the U.S., and that will contribute to upward pressure on house prices. And so I expect sort of low single-digit house price growth this year. So again, not too hot, not too cold, more in line with historical averages. And we know real estate is local, so there will definitely be variation depending on where you are in the country. But on an average sort of national level, I expect sort of slower, more modest house price growth this year, which in combination with lower rates and still growing household income should result in an improvement in affordability by the end of the year.
I think that's a really good point, is that that inflation part, like if wages are going up, right, then that helps people who want to buy. I do think it's interesting, like, so where are we, if you look over the last, you know, say 2019 levels, that's where home prices were, you know, and we had this huge run up in most areas in the pandemic. And now it's like, okay, low single digits. So where does that put us nationally compared to like 2019?
We're still, I mean, cumulatively house price growth is still, you know, obviously up considerably. And, you know, house prices are downside sticky unless you have to sell. You won't. You can stay put. You know, we're not seeing a lot of foreclosure activity or distress sales, which would obviously put some downward pressure on house prices. That's what we saw in the global financial crisis. We're not in the same situation now as we were then. And so, you know, if you as someone sitting in their home, you're like, well, I don't want to sell my house for less than what my neighbor got, so I think I'll just stay put. And so house prices are very much downside sticky, and we're seeing that in the housing market of this year and of last. You know, we saw house prices come down a little bit when mortgage rates spiked, but then have been reaccelerating since. You know, our first American house price index shows that, you know, we continue to reach a new peak in house prices. And so it's that downside stickiness, and it's the ongoing supply and demand imbalance that's keeping that pressure.
It's, you know, there's so much psychology to home buying because it's just like with rates where, you know, 7% is much higher than 3%, but it's way better than 8%. Like 8% like kind of shocked us all to be like, okay, 7%. Okay, I better jump on it, you know, for some home buyers. And I think the same thing with prices. So I live in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, which traditionally is not an area that, you know, got hot or ran up or whatever, but it sure did in the pandemic for us.
Yes.
And it's amazing how, you know, because I've never experienced it firsthand before, exactly what you said. It's sticky. Now, you know, things that I would have said, I am not paying that amount for a house in DFW. If I'm paying that amount, I better be on a coast. I better be, you know, have a view. I better not be here. And you know what? I absolutely did buy that house for that price. And I am not on the coast because, you know, your expectations change, your experience changes, the people you talk to and what is available. If you want to buy, you're going to have to, you know, figure that out. And knowing that mostly it goes up. I mean, nothing always goes up, right. But it's not like there's some big home price crash coming.
Right. We're not expecting that just given the fundamentals of this market, but also you're right. It's, you know, it's behavioral economics really playing out in real time. We're seeing anchoring bias, right? We're seeing people that are sort of anchored to 3% mortgage rates, although I do think that that expectation is changing now that we've been in this sort of 7% environment for some time. But we were seeing that for a long time. Are people saying, well, should I hold out because rates are going to come back down to 3% again? And you see it in a lot of different directions, I think, in the housing market. But, you know, I always say you can't time the market. You just can't, right? Because even if rates come down, well, maybe then it will get really competitive again. And so the lower rates will be offset by higher house prices that are a result of more bidding wars. And so it's really hard to time the market. My suggestion has always been, you know, if you find a house you like at a price you can afford that you feel comfortable with, you know, I think that's all there is to it because it's just really difficult to, you know, quote unquote, time the market.
No, I feel the exact same way. And I had family members. I have a big family. Someone told me, it was like, you're always talking about family members. I have a big family. I come from 6 kids. I had 4 kids. I have 20 nieces and nephews. So there's just a lot of people in the
That's mix, amazing.
Right? Yes. And then so many of those people have married in. So now family, you know, what family is even more expanded. So, but I had a family member who wanted to buy in the pandemic and thought, you know, just for various reasons, didn't do it. And it's so tough now because that's in the same area they were looking. It's so much higher. And I feel so bad for that. At the same time, I've talked about my son who sort of jumped on it right before the pandemic and then in the pandemic. And, you know, it worked out for him. It doesn't always, right? I mean, we all know that it's not a sure thing, but it is very interesting.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's a lot of psychology and behavioral economics to the whole thing. You know, there's also FOMO, you know, fear of missing out on rates or a certain house. And so there's a lot at play, which is why, you know, take a step back, figure out what you need, really think through, you know, the neighborhood, what you can afford, all of those questions, and just be, you know, prepared to when you're ready to put in that offer.
I love it. Well, I didn't want to have this without talking about the fact that you are going to be a speaker at the gathering event that we're having in April. We are so excited about that. And your specific panel, I'm going to be moderating you, Logan, and Mike Simonson. This is going to be so much fun.
This is going to be the best. Yeah.
Brains on stage. I'm just going to be like, okay, let me do this. But we're really excited because this is such an interesting housing market, such an interesting time. So it's going to be fun to have you up on stage with those guys and all of us for talking about this.
I'm so excited. I mean, you know, Mike and Logan are such rock stars, and so it'll be really, really fun to be up there with them. I'm sure we'll agree, but it will be interesting if we have anything we disagree on.
Well, so. That's what I'll be kind of probing into is like, you know, let's talk about this topic and see where you guys land. I'll know ahead of time where you guys land so I can find those things and then really dig into why on the things that you agree like and what we see going forward. So, you know, everybody is trying to plan their business. And this is the kind of information that, you know, we're going to get the big brains together and then talk about some things that can be very specific to people can take that actionable insight home to try to drive their business forward.
It's certainly another sort of uncertain year in the housing market, especially given all of what's going on with inflation and monetary policy. And so I think this is the right group of people to sort of sort it all out.
I do too. Well, Odetta, thank you so much for joining me today. And I will see you in April, if not before. But thanks so much.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to Housing Wire Daily. If you haven't already, we'd love for you to take a minute to rate the show and leave a comment.
and make sure to tune in tomorrow for more news and insight.